The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Bill Ruggiero here on Audio Journal. Welcome to another edition of Talking Topics. This show is provided by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, the Mass Commission for the Blind, and underwritten by Unibank. If you have any questions about our programs or want to see a program schedule, please give us a call at 508-797-1117 or visit us on our webpage at www.audiojournal.org. I'd like to represent our guest here. Her name is Anna Connors. Good afternoon, Anna.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm doing good. And she reads the AJ Sports page, folks. And that is on from 4 to 5 p.m. on Fridays. Am I right about that?
You are right, Bill.
Yes, I am. Okay, Anna, tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us where you're from.
Okay, Bill. I am from Shrewsbury, Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I've been living there about 20 years.
Yes.
And, I love the community. I like that I'm really close here to AJ. And, that's where I come from.
Yeah. Did you go to school there?
Actually, no. I went to school in New York. I'm a transplanted, so I was from New York, so I did all my schooling in New York. I moved here, like I said, about 20 years ago. I'm old, Bill.
Wow.
So I'm very old. So I'm way beyond that high school, college time. So
that's okay. Yeah. Okay, question two is, you read the AJ Sports page, and how long have you been doing that?
You know, I can't believe it, but I asked at the last event that we had, and I was told I'm doing it 10 years. I can't believe it. It's gone by so fast, and I enjoy every minute of it.
Yes, I enjoy every minute of it, too, because I usually listen to the archives because sometimes I don't have time to listen to it. And, folks, if you're on the website or anything, just pull up the AJ Sports page, and you can listen to the show and anytime you want, and I really like it, and you read very, very nicely along with Nick and Chris.
Thank you very much. I take pride in it. I really do. And if you want to know a little bit of how I get my stories, I really go on the side of more, I hate to call it this, but I do more fluff stories. I leave it to Nick and Chris because they're the guys. They can do the rough and tumble sports. I give a little bit more, I don't want to say a feminine side, but more of the heart of the sport. Like today, I just finished my recording just before I left. And it was about Tatiana McFadden, who is a wheelchair racer, and she happens to be very decorated in Paralympics. And it just shows her life from being adopted in Russia when she was 6 years old, came to America, and how she worked her way up. So I go more on those touchy-feely kind of stories. So it gives a little bit more heart to the sport, and you really get a real good flavor of the athlete. So that's where I go in my sports reporting.
Yeah, and in your last segment, you were talking about archery for the blind and different handicapped people, which I thought was very interesting.
Yes, it's really incredible.
Yes, because I used to do archery at Camp Winnicag out in Ashburnham. I don't know if you ever heard of that. It's a blind camp, and it's a 7-day inventors camp, and it's right in Ashburnham, which I when I went there, it was like way back in the 90s and stuff like that. But we did archery, and it was very interesting. The way we did it was they had like different balloons set up in front of you. You would go like you would stand about 5 or 6 feet back from the balloon, and then they would tell you which way to hold the archery thing, and then you just pull back, and then you just let it go, and it pops the balloon.
That's wonderful. So you get that audible, so you can really know where it's been.
Yeah.
And where,
yeah.
Yeah, where it ended up. It's really amazing. You know, it just goes to prove to you, it doesn't matter your disability. There's always a way to do something, and people are coming up with amazing ways to accommodate everyone. So I really believe in, you know, activities for everyone.
Yeah, because most sighted people don't know about how sports are really good for handicapped people, like saying you're in a wheelchair, you have no arms, you know, you could just do it.
You know, I'm sure, I don't know if I did on that segment that you're talking about, but there is an archer, his name is Matt Stutzman, and he has no arms. He pulls the bow back with his feet, and he hit, everybody should go back to the Paralympics, put in Matt Stutzman, he hit a perfect bullseye. My brother is an archer, and he is just amazed by Matt.
Yes.
In fact, Matt, it's really incredible. Matt started out when, well, I really forgot how his disability occurred. I think it was from birth. But he actually had to raise his family and hunt to get food. So he had to do it.
You guys were reading to me about that. And I found that very interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it goes to show you that, you know, if you want to do a sport, you can do it no matter what your disability is.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There's that old saying that my mother used to say, where there's a will, there's a way. And it's true.
And that's true. Okay, question three is, what is your favorite article and why?
Oh, wow. I have so many favorite articles. That's a tough one. You threw a hard ball at me. Ooh, get that sports reference.
Yes.
Ooh, look at me.
Yes.
Anyway, my favorite, gosh. Oh, there's so many. You know, I'm going to have to go back to Matt Stutzman because I can't believe his story. No arms, an archer, hunted for his family. He had no money. That was the way he fed his family. He was a single father of,
wow,
I think, two boys.
Yes.
And that's the way he hunted. And this guy has made it literally from the ground up. So he's an amazing archer, amazing athlete, amazing human being. See, when he was brought up, his parents never let him feel different.
Yeah.
If he couldn't do something, they'd say, figure it out. And the kid did.
Yes.
So it just shows the human nature.
You know? Yep. And that's what my provider says a lot. Just figure it out. You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Question four. How often do you record? Where do you record your articles?
Okay. I used to do it here, right in the studio. And then the old pandemic got us, and that kind of put us out. But we never stopped, so we did it. Well, I do it on my phone at home. I have a little kind of office / messy room that I do it in, but it's nice and quiet, and I keep all my stories on the desk. I do Google Alerts. That's how I get my stories. I put in a little thing on the computer, little keywords, Paralympics, disability, sports, and it just comes up with all these stories. I pick them out, of course, you know, my favorites. I leave some out because I know the guys are going to get them, Nick or Chris. But I do it in my room. Usually takes me, you know, now like I'm doing it 10 years now, I usually have to say I do it in one take. But you know what? The thing is, this audio journal sports page was always live. We were on Friday night from 5 to 6, and we would all sit here, and it was live. So if you made a mistake, it went out live. So I said, you know what? When I'm sitting home and doing my story, if I make a mistake, I'm going to leave it in. Because you know what? I'm human, and I make mistakes.
Yes.
And, yeah, and
yes.
The thing is, I happen to have multiple sclerosis. So having multiple sclerosis, it's not only debilitating walking, that's my main disability, if you will, mm-hmm. but there's also speech impediments as well. That can happen. But the thing is, this doing this has taught me to slow down, take a breath. If you make a mistake, it's okay. So I leave it in to show our audience, who probably might be disabled out in the audience, like, look at her. She can still do it. She's a little cuckoo, but that's okay. That's a part of it.
Right.
But it just right. shows that we're all human, and I think it brings it down to being human.
Yes. Yes, And that's the way I do my sports and weather schedules. I do it on my phone at home where it's quiet. I have a bedroom in the basement. I call my radio office, and I usually do it in there. And I record the weather and sports schedules for Audio Journal, and then I play it. And sometimes it takes me... Oh, 3 or 4 tries to do it, and sometimes I get messed up on the date. I have to go back, and then I have to do it again. But you have to be patient, people. You just can't do it all in one take. You know, you got to be patient with it.
Well, I enjoy your show. I've listened to it many times. The thing is, I feel like you're talking to us, so it's kind of like a conversation,
yes.
so
yes.
it makes it very
yes.
homey and fun.
Yes. Yes, it does. Okay. Okay. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. You listen to Talking Topics with Bill and Anna Connors.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.
Okay, welcome back to Talking Topics. Anna, I want to ask you what your favorite hobbies are. What do you like to do for fun?
Oh boy, Bill, I have so many things I like to do. Okay, let's see. Let's start out with something that I do very often. I happen to be a belly dancer.
Wow.
Somebody who is disabled. Here we go. I'm disabled. I have MS. I've had it for 20 years. And I have been belly dancing for 14 of those years.
Can you describe to our listeners what belly dancing is?
Belly dancing is basically more of a Middle Eastern type of dance. And, yeah, that's what I do along with my dance troupe called the Silver Moon Gypsies, and we are 5 senior ladies, and
wow.
we go to nursing homes and retirement villages and, let's put it this way, charity events, anywhere that'll have us. But I've been doing this for 14 years. We do lots of different dancing, not just belly dancing. We'll do a little bit of, we call it gypsy fusion, so there's a lot of different flavors put into that. But the way
yeah.
we get dressed up is very belly dancer-ish, if you will.
Wow.
But that's one of the things I do. And like I said, I've been doing that for 14 years. But then I also took up a new hobby.
Yes.
And Anna, before you, this
oh, yes.
is Harry. Before we go on, Anna, can I put you on the spot?
Oh,
can you
shit.
Describe to our listeners what you do with your body when you do belly dancing?
Oh, well, it's very fluid. It's very... syncopated. There's a lot of undulation. Ooh, that's a word.
Ooh,
isn't
there's
it?
A lot of undulation.
Never heard of that word.
Yes, that's when you do like a body roll. So it's in and out, and you move your belly a little bit with that. So, yeah, it's
wow.
a lot of fun. A lot of hip action, back and forth.
Cool.
A lot
Thank
of
you.
Sounds too, because we wear. It's very audible because we wear a lot of coins on our belt. So as we move, it's very click click, and sometimes we'll use zills, which are little symbols. That's why, did you ever hear, if anybody knows a drummer, they use zildjian cymbals? Zills.
Yes.
So
yes.
They're little zills. So, yeah. So there you
now,
go.
Now, do you do it to music?
I'm sorry?
Do you, when you belly dance...
Oh, yes. Lots of music. Lots of music.
Like what kind of music do you do it to?
Well, we have some Arabic music that we dance to, but then we also have a dance that we do, chirimbim chirimbam, which is Yiddish. So we dance to that as well.
Wow.
I actually do a solo to Dunkashane. So you know what? We mix it up. Exactly. Darling Dunkashane. You got it. But we do it to all different kinds of music. I mean... there's even pop music. One of the girls does the chicken dance. Absolutely hysterical. She puts on a little chicken head and little chicken stockings, and she does a belly dance and a chicken dance. So we do this to kids' things or charity events. And, oh, my goodness, there's so many
things. I like
things.
The chicken dance. It's pretty cool.
It is fun.
I was wondering if I could play it on my show. The chicken dance.
That's right.
I love the chicken dance.
Now, Anna, when I interrupted before, I think you were going to tell us about another hobby. Is that right?
Okay. Yes, I do have another hobby, which I took up. I keep on thinking it's not that long, but I think I'm playing the ukulele for 5 years now.
Wow.
So, in fact, it was started with a friend here that also did audio journal. In fact, he's the one that got me into Sports Page, Marty Ayotte. He got me into the ukulele, so I play... Over at the Shrewsbury Senior Center, which I put together a little group in the afternoon. Anybody can join at the Senior Center every Thursday from 1 to 3 p.m. We have a ukulele social, we call it, because it's a little ukulele, a lot of talking. So it's a lot of fun, but we all have a good time. And then I belong to Betty Machete and the Jumping Fleas, which is an all-girl ukulele group. And we have a lot of fun. And we've been playing all over the place, so we're doing some performances as well. So it's a lot of fun.
Do you guys perform, like, around Worcester?
Yes. We used to practice over at the JMAC Center, which is in the center of Worcester. But we play all over. We're going to be doing something there. We're opening up for some charity event, and I'm so sorry I can't think of it, but we're doing something in November that we're the opening act. But we've done a few gigs in Newton and some of the areas around here. In fact, Briarwood. We had performed at Briarwood, which is one of the assisted livings close by here to the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's neat. And also, can you describe to our listeners what a ukulele is?
A ukulele is looks like a small guitar, has four strings instead of six.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you, why we are called Betty Machete and the Jumping Fleas is a flea is actually another word for a ukulele. So, there's actually a maker. It's called the flea ukulele. It's actually quite cool. But, yes, and a machete, that's another name for a ukulele. In Hawaii, they also called it a machete.
Wow.
But the ukulele was actually, I don't want to say discovered or invented, whatever, or originated, maybe that's best, originated in Portugal. So that's where it first came out, and then Hawaii.
That is so cool.
Yes, and it's a fun instrument. It's easy to learn.
I love the ukulele.
It's
yes,
a lot of fun.
Yes, I do, because I guess... They use it in country music, too.
They do.
Yes, they do.
Hey, it's going all over the place. A lot of people are picking up the ukulele. It's a great instrument.
So are you saying that fleas are everywhere?
Oh, yes, they are. And they're jumping. Jumping fleas.
The jumping fleas. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy playing. And you know what? Music is another thing that expands your mind. So, like I said, I'm old. Okay, I'm 70 years old. But the thing is, this is good to keep the brain going. So anybody who has any kind of ailment or even dementia, anything like that, it's good to keep those brain cells firing up to keep those dendrites moving. So it's all very important. So
yes.
I think ukulele
is
a lot of fun.
It's very important to have music in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are sometimes lonely and they don't have anybody there. Or just, you know, just go into a place and play the piano.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have people come to the Shrewsbury Senior Center that really don't want to play the ukulele, but they'll come in and sit down and sing all the songs because we do, you know, classics and you know, even Sweet Caroline or whatever. And people just come in and they just want to sing. And it's proven that people with Parkinson's, people with dementia, wake up when they hear music. I know with dancing, when we go to nursing homes and we'll do dementia units, and you'll see people there, they kind of don't look like they're there.
Yes.
But they might hear a song that awakens that, and all of a sudden you see a spark, and they come alive. So music is very, very
important.
That's
right. It's like church music.
Mm-hmm.
Church music gets people going, you know?
Absolutely.
And, you know, I belong to a church in Worcester called First Unitarian Church. It's a great church. It's fun. People can come in. They believe whatever they want to believe. They just come in and sit down and worship with us, and it's great.
It's part of a community.
Yep. Okay, question six. What is your first, what is your favorite restaurant?
Okay, I'm going to have to say my favorite restaurant is in Westboro, and it's called Mayori Indian Cuisine. It's very good. I love Indian food.
So, I never had Indian food.
Oh, it's yummy.
Yeah.
It's very spicy, but it's good.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah. Spicy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Loving that spice.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Let's see. What's the other question?
Maybe it's time for if Anna has a question for you, and then we can wrap up.
Okay, Anna, do you have a question for me?
Let's see, Bill. I'm thinking, I know how much you like sports, and actually I've seen you at one of the games that we went to over at Polar Park. So
yes.
I was just wondering, when you're sitting there watching the game, if you will, for lack of a better term, I saw you sitting in front of me, how are you able to decipher actually what's going on the field? Is it something that you hear the sound of the bat hitting or the people around you? Like, what gives you that, what gives you the information to what you're experiencing?
Well, there is a radio station called iAudio Radio, which I do listen, and I know that when I hear the crack of the bat, sometimes I can hear the ball go foul sometimes. Like for instance, when somebody hits a home run for the visiting team, the stadium is quiet. So I know that the ball is hit off the bat, and I could hear it, and then I could hear like a little drop, like a little beep, like that, and then the ball drops into the glove. Or sometimes I could tell if a ball is high and outside by listening to the crowd. If the crowd is cheering, then it's a strike. You know?
Very interesting. Have you ever thought about doing beep baseball?
Yes. Yes, I have done that before.
Oh, neat. With the Renegades?
Not with the Renegades. I did it at Perkins.
Oh, nice.
Perkins School for the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we had Cape Week one time, and we had a beep and baseball game. It was very interesting. You use two bases, I think, right?
Yes, I think it's
Two
or three. I'm trying to remember. I actually went to one of their games in Watertown a few years back, and it was so much fun. I can't believe watching these guys go full force at that base. It's frightening to me.
Yes.
But it's amazing. It's amazing just listening to the beeps at the bases.
I met one of the guys at the Polar Park who was on the Boston Renegades team, and we're trying to get him to come in for an interview.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Is it Weissman, his last name? Rob Weissman, I believe, is like the head guy?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, he's amazing. I met him, and just amazing team. It's just incredible.
Yeah.
And, Bill, you met one of the players, right?
Right.
That's really cool. Yeah. We'll get him in here, Bill.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We will.
We'll have you make the phone call.
Yep.
Oh, he'll listen to you, Bill.
Yes.
You got clout around here.
I know.
I want to also mention, if anybody in the area of Worcester, the surrounding area, please contact All Out Adventures if you would like to participate in some of these sports. I have done cycling, I have done kayaking, and there's skating in the winter. So please check out on the internet, alloutadventures.org. Thank you so much, Bill.
Yeah, Anna, really quickly about the skating for both our sighted and non-sighted listeners. Can you describe, I think this is so cool, what did they, for someone who's non-sighted, what do they place you in on the rink? Have you experienced that? Have you seen it?
Well, they could do it many different ways.
Right.
Either you can get, like for me, I can't really skate. So I go in. If you know sled hockey, you go into one of those sleds.
Yes.
And then you use two little, well, that's what you actually use when you're playing sled hockey, these little cut-off sticks that are hockey sticks that have little spikes, and you propel yourself like this, and then you turn it over and hit the puck. So, but as far as you could do that and have someone help you, or they have these PVC pipe kind of walkers that kind of surround you that you can still skate. And plus, there's so many people to help you out there. So anyone can do it, anyone. They even have hoyers there to help out people that are severely disabled, to help them into the sleighs.
Yeah, one thing I hear you saying, you said it indirectly, is that it's very safe. And it's fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just went biking on the Blackstone River Trail, and I did a recumbent bike. I've done it twice in a row. I've done kayaking on Lake Quinsig, and anyone can go sighted, unsighted, paralyzed, you name it. Everyone can do it. There is no excuse not to.
And only because I'm a big believer in audio description, can you describe to our listeners what a recumbent bike is?
A recumbent bike is actually like sitting in a sled. So your legs are out in front of you. You either can do pedaling with your feet, or if your feet don't work, they have an arm kind of like pedal up at your arms, so your arms go around, your hands go around. So I've done them both, and they're both wonderful and a great workout.
I've been on a recumbent bike. It was an exercise bike.
Well, this is even more fun because you're going on the trail. So this is fun, and they have people to help you out. What they'll do is they'll do a tandem. So, in fact, when we went kayaking, the person who's visually impaired was in front, but the guy in the back steered. So the person in the front had to use all their muscles, so they didn't get away with anything. The guy in the back was the rudder. So there you go. So it's somebody, everybody can do it.
That's great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Well, I think it's time to wrap it up here on Talking Topics. Anna, I want to thank you for coming in. You know, I just hope that you keep reading the AJ Sports page, and we'll keep learning about different disabled sports. And I hope people get out there and play some ball. And when you want to do something, just figure it out and do it. This show is provided by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind, the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, and underwritten by Unibank. If you have any questions about our programs, please give us a call at 508-797-1117 or visit us on our website at www.audiojournal.org. This show will be archived in its entirety after this show. This has been Bill Ruggiero saying have a great and happy day, and stay tuned for our next Talking Topics show in the future. Bye.
following program is brought to you by Audio Journal, a radio reading service intended for a printed paired audience. Material is selected with the interest of its audience in mind, with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, its staff, or volunteer readers. Welcome all to Audio Journal's Poets Corner, the program that offers its print-impaired audience and other listeners the opportunity to listen to poetry of people from all walks of life, of those from the distant past right up to the present day. This production is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. I'm George Blomquist, and for the next half hour, I'll be reciting verses from the pens of poets such as Donald Justice, D.H. Lawrence, Robert Phillips, and Joseph Stroud, to name but four of the poets found in the marvelous anthology titled Good Poems, featuring the works that have been aired over the years on Garrison Keillor's wonderful PBS radio program, The Writer's Almanac. This particular anthology is divided into various chapters according to certain topics or themes, and today we'll begin our program in the midst of Chapter 3, titled Music, with the poem The Pupil, by Donald Justice, as he wistfully recalls the trepidations of piano lessons as a child. It reads as follows. Picture me, the shy pupil at the door, one small tight fist clutching the dread czerny. Back then, time was still harmony, not money, and I could spend a whole week practicing for that moment on the threshold. Then, to take courage, and enter, and pass among mysterious scents, and sit quite straight, and with a frail confidence, assault the keyboards with a childish flourish, only to lose my place or forget the key, and almost doubt the very metronome outside the traffic, the laborers going home, and still to bear on across Chopin or Brahms, stupid and wild with love, equally for the storms of C minor, and the calms of sea. Born in 1925 in Miami, Florida, Donald Justice grew up in Miami in the Depression, an only child of hard-working Southern Baptists. He was dazzled by Dostoevsky in poetry and moved north to study with Berryman, Robert Lowell, and Carl Shapiro. He taught in many places, including the University of Florida, and then he retired. In our next poem, the speaker pines for the days of his childhood in Piano, by D.H. Lawrence. Softly, in the dusk, a woman is singing to me, taking me back down the vista of years, till I see a child sitting under the piano in the boom of the tingling strings and pressing the small, poised feet of a mother who smiles as she sings. In spite of myself, the insidious mastery of song betrays me back, till the heart of me weeps to belong to the old Sunday evenings at home with winter outside, and hymns in the cozy parlor, the tinkling piano our guide. So now it is vain for the singer to burst into clamor with the great black piano appassionato. The glamour of childish days is upon me. My manhood is cast down in the flood of remembrance. I weep like a child for the past. Musical instruments can be a source of solace for the introverts and outcasts, especially in our teenage years, as noted in our next poem called Instrument of Choice, by Robert Phillips. She was a girl no one ever chose for teams or clubs, dances or dates. So she chose the instrument no one else wanted, the tuba. Big as herself, heavy as her heart, its golden tubes and coils encircled her like a lover's embrace. Its body pressed on hers. Into its mouthpiece she blew life, its deep-throated oompas oompas sounding almost like mating cries. Robert Phillips lives in Houston, Texas, and is the author of 25 books, Spinach Days and News About People You Know being his most recent works. Our next verse commemorates the music of the 1950s and early 60s, when Dick Clark's American Bandstand ruled the day for American teenagers. It's titled Homage, Doo-Wop, by Joseph Stroud. There's so little sweetness in the music I hear now. No croons, no doo-wop or slow ones where you could hug up with someone and hold them against your body, feel their heart against yours, touch their cheek with your cheek. And it was okay. It was allowed. Even the mothers standing around at the birthday party, the rug rolled back in the living room, didn't mind if you held their daughter as you swayed to the music, eyes squeezed shut, holding each other and holding on to the song until you almost stopped moving, just shuffled there and bracing as the moon glows and penguins crooned, and the mothers looked on, not with disapproval or scorn. No, they looked on with their eyes dreaming, as if looking from 1,000 miles away, as if from over the mountain and across the sea, a look on their faces I didn't understand, not knowing then those other songs I would some day enter, not knowing how I would shimmer and writhe, jigged like a puppet doing the shimmy-shimmy cocoa bop, or glide from turn to counter-turn within the waltz, not knowing how I would hold the other through the night and across the years, holding on for love and dear life, for solace and kindness, learning the dance as we go, learning from those first awkward shuffling steps, the sweetness and doo-wop back at the beginning. Joseph Stroud studied at San Francisco State University and has taught for many years at Carbillo. He's the author of Below Cold Mountain. The following poem is titled The Persistence of Song by Howard Moss. Although it is not evening yet, the secretaries have changed their frocks as if it were time for dancing, and locked up in the scholars' books there is a kind of rejoicing. There is a kind of singing that even the dark stone canyon makes as though all fountains were going at once, and the color flowed from the bricks in one wild lit upsurging. What is the weather doing? And who arrived on a scallop shell with the smell of the sea this morning, creating a small upheaval high above the scaffolding by saying, "All will be well. There is a kind of rejoicing." Is there a kind of rejoicing in saying all will be well? High above the scaffolding, creating a small upheaval, the smell of the sea this morning arrived on a scallop shell. What was the weather doing in the one wild lit upsurging? At once, the color flowed from bricks as though all fountains were going, and even the dark stone canyon makes here a kind of singing, and there a kind of rejoicing. And locked up in the scholars' books, there is a time for dancing when the secretaries have changed their frocks. And though it is not yet evening, there is the persistence of song. Born in 1922, Howard Morse was the poetry editor of the New Yorker magazine from 1950 until shortly before his death in 1987. In our next verse, A father considers how popular music is a cross-generational phenomenon that even his two daughters have picked up on. It's titled Uli Papakow for Bess and Molly by David Huddle. My brother Charles brought home the news the kids were saying Take a Flying Leap and Eat Me Raw and Bipapalua. 40 miles he rode, the bus, there and back. The dog and I met him at the door, panting for a hokey-pokey, hokey-da-wadi-wadi-hokey-pokey. In Fuchi, Vietnam, I heard tapes somebody's sister sent of Wild Thing, I Think I Love You, and Hey Now, What's That Sound, Everybody Look, What's... Now it's my daughters bringing home No Da, Rock Out, whatever, like I totally paused, and like I'm my mother. Her hands in biscuit dough, her ears turning red from Ain't Nothing But a Blue Monday and Tutti Frutti All Rudy. Born in Ivanhoe, Virginia in 1942, David Huddle was a parachutist in Vietnam. He lives in Vermont, where he writes fiction and essays as well as poetry. He once said, On those occasions when one's serenity seems to be collapsing, I recommend that one step out into the backyard and vigorously spit. We all experience occasionally when a particular song or tune is stuck in our heads, what we call earworms. And our next poem is a rather sympathetic reflection on such phenomenon. It's titled Elevator Music by Henry Taylor. A tune with no more substance than the air, performed on underwater instruments, is proper to this short lift from the earth. It hovers as we draw into ourselves and turn our reverent eyes toward the lights that count us to our various destinies. We're all in this together, the song says, and later we'll descend. The melody is like a name we don't recall just now that still keeps on insisting it is there. Born in Loudoun County, Virginia in 1942, Henry Taylor is a teacher, a horseman, poet, parodist, and author of Brief Candles, collection of the Clairhues, including According to Matthew, The Wrath You Feel, Feel May Be Your Own, Live Not by Bread Alone. The following verse is a salute to the banjo and the banjo makers. It's called The Grain of Sound by Robert Morgan. A banjo maker in the mountains, when looking out for wood to carve an instrument, will walk among the trees and knock on trunks. He'll hit the bark and listen for a note. A hickory makes the brightest sound. The poplar has a mellow ease. But only straightest grain will keep the purity of tone, the sock for depth that makes the lick sparkle. A banjo has a shining shiver. It twangs with glitter, like the light on splashing water, even though its face is just a drum of hide of cow or cat or even skunk. The hide will magnify the note, the sad of honest pain, the chill blood song, lament, confession, haunt, as tree will sing again from root and vein and sap and twig in wind. And cat will moan as hand plucks nerve, picks bone and skin and gut and pricks the heart as blood will answer blood and love begins to knock along the grain. Robert Morgan was born in Hendersonville, North Carolina in 1944. He is a scholar of Appalachian folklore and history whose novels set in Western Carolina have attracted millions of readers, including his books Gap Creek and The Truest Pleasure. He once wrote, Sinners make better characters. Next, I Will Make You Brooches by Robert Louis Stevenson. I will make you brooches and toys for your delight of birdsong at morning and starshine at night. I will make a palace fit for you and me of green days in forests and blue days at sea. I will make my kitchen, and you shall keep your room, where white flows the river and bright blows the broom. And you shall wash your linen and keep your body white in rainfall at morning and dewfall at night. And this shall be for music when no one else is near, the fine song for singing, the rare song to hear, that only I remember, that only you admire, of the broad road that stretches and the roadside fire. Robert Louis Stevenson was born in 1850. He grew up respectable in Edinburgh, the son of a lighthouse engineer. He himself tried engineering, then law, before he left home to be a writer, traveling through Europe and writing about it. Then on to California in 1878, from which he wrote The Amateur Emigrant. Magazine fiction followed, then fortuitously Treasure Island, written to amuse his family and published in 1883. It was the real start of his professional career, followed closely by A Child's Garden of Verses, Kidnapped, Prince Otto, and his long short story, Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. A sickly person through much of his life, he died in 1894. Music can help release our inner selves from time to time, enabling us to seize and enjoy the moment, as is the case in our next poem, The Dance, by C.K. Williams. It reads, "A middle-aged woman, quite plain to be polite about it, and somewhat stout to be more courteous still, but when she and the rather good-looking, much younger man she's with gets up to dance, her forearm descends with such delicate lightness, such restrained but confident ardor athwart his shoulder, drawing him to her with such a firm, compelling warmth, and moving him with effortless grace into the union she's instantly established with the not at all rhythmically solid music, second-rate café, that something in the rest of us, some doubt about ourselves, some sad conjecture, seems to be allayed. Nothing that we'd ever thought of as a real lack, nothing not to be admired or be repentant for, but something to which we've never adequately given credence, which might have consoling implications about how we misbelieve ourselves, and so the world, that world beyond us, which so often disappoints, but which sometimes shows us, lovely, what we are." Born in 1936 in Newark, New Jersey, Charles Kenneth C.K. Williams played college basketball and lived for many years in Philadelphia. He died in 2015. Our next poem is titled The Investment by Robert Frost. Over back where they speak of life as staying, you couldn't call it living, for it ain't, there was an old, old house, renewed with paint, and in it a piano loudly playing. Out in the ploughed ground in the cold, a digger, among unearthed potatoes, standing still, was counting winter dinners, one on a hill, with half an ear to the piano's vigor. All that piano and new paint back there. Was it some money suddenly come into? Or some extravagance young love had been to? Or old love on an impulse not to care? Not to sink under being man and wife, but to get some color and music out of life. Robert Frost was farmer, schoolteacher, a shoemaker, and finally poet, who, from the publication of North of Boston in 1914, was widely read and admired. A public career of almost 50 years. Shrewdly, he adopted a genial public persona of a homely Yankee farmer, behind which lived a troubled and restless man and a consummate lyrical poet. To the Frost persona was given a stream of honors and awards, and thus the poet was sustained. He once wrote, "It is only a moment here and a moment there that the greatest writer has. Poetry is a way of taking life by the throat." Robert Frost died in 1963. In our next poem, an elderly couple reminisce about life together while being embraced by beautiful music. It's called The Dumka by B.H. Fairchild. A dumka, by the way, is a form of Slavonic or Eastern European folk music. It reads as follows. His parents would sit alone together on the blue divan in the small living room, listening to Dvořák's piano quintet. They would sit there in their old age, side by side, quite still, backs rigid, hands in their laps, and looked straight ahead at the yellow light of the phonograph that seemed as distant as a lamp-lit window seen across the plains late at night. They would sit quietly as something dense and radiant swirled around them, something like the dust storms of the 30s that began by smearing the sky green with doom, but afterwards drenched the air with an amber glow and then vanished, leaving profiles of children on the pillows and a pale gauze over mantels and tabletops. But it was the memory of dust that encircled them now and made them smile faintly and raise and bow their heads as they spoke about the farm in twilight with piano music spiraling out across the red roads and fields of maize, bread lines in the city, women and men lining Main Street like mannequins, and then the war, the white frame rent house, and the homecoming, the homecoming, the homecoming, and afterwards, green lawns, and a new piano with a mahogany gleam like pond ice at dawn, and now alone in the house in the vanishing neighborhood, the slow mornings of coffee and newspapers and evenings of music and scattered bits of talk like leaves suddenly fallen before one notices the new season. And they would sit there alone, and soon he would reach across and lift her hand, as if it were the last unbroken leaf, and he would hold her hand in his for a long time, and they would look far off into the music of their lives, as they sat alone together in the room in the house in Kansas. B.H. Fairchild was born in Houston, Texas. He grew up in small towns in West Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. He lives in Claremont, California, and he won the $100,000 Kingsley Tufts Poetry Award in 1999. Spirited marching band music can show up in the darndest places, as expressed in our next poem, which happens to be untitled. It's written by Lawrence Ferlinghetti, and it reads as follows. The Green Street Mortuary Marching Band marches right down Green Street and turns into Columbus Avenue, where all the cafe sitters at the sidewalk cafe tables sit talking and laughing and looking right through it as if it happened every day in little old wooden North Beach, San Francisco, but at the same time feeling thrilled by the stirring sound of the gallant marching band as if it were celebrating life and never heard of death. And right behind it comes the open hearse with the closed casket and the big framed picture under glass, propped up, showing the patriarch who's just croaked. And now all seven members of the Green Street Mortuary Marching Band, with the faded gold braid on their beaten-up captain's hats, raise their bent axes and start blowing all more or less together, and out comes this onward Christian soldier, like you heard it once upon a time, only much slower, with a dead beat.
And now you see all the relatives behind the closed glass windows of the long black cars, and their faces are all shiny, like they've been wiping with washcloths, and all super serious, like as if the bottom has just dropped out of their private markets. And there's the widow, all in weeds, and the sister, with the bent frame, and the mad brother, who never got through school, and Uncle Louie, with the big wig. And there they are, all assembled together, and facing each other, maybe for the first time in a long time. But their masks and public faces are all in place, as they face outward, behind the traveling corpse up ahead. And oompa oompas go the band, very slowly, with the trombones and the tuba and the trumpets and the big bass drum, and the corpse hears nothing or everything. And it's a glorious autumn day in Old North Beach, if only he could have lived to see it. Only we wouldn't have had the band who, half an hour later, can be seen straggling back silently along the sidewalks, looking like hungover, broken-down Irish bartenders dying for a drink or a last hurrah. Lawrence Monsanto Ferlinghetti was born in March of 1919. He was an American poet, painter, social activist, and co-founder of City Lights Booksellers and Publishers. He was an author of poetry, translations, fiction, theater, art criticism, and film narration. Ferlinghetti was best known for his second collection of poems, A Coney Island of the Mind, published in 1958, which was translated into 9 languages and sold over 1 million copies. When Ferlinghetti turned 100 in March of 2019, the city of San Francisco turned his birthday, March 24th, into Lawrence Ferlinghetti Day. Ferlinghetti died in February of 2021. You've been listening to Poets' Corner, a production of Audio Journal, proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you have any comments or suggestions for Poets' Corner, please let us know by calling us at 508-797-1117 or by emailing us at info@audiojournal.org or by mailing us at Audio Journal, 799 West Boylston Street, Worcester, Massachusetts, 01606. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or you can go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. I'm George Bloomquist, thanking you for listening. And now, stay tuned for other local programming brought to you by Audio Journal.
Hi, the Bay State Council of the Blind has available free Braille copies of a new publication from the CDC. It's entitled COVID-19 Vaccination Guidance, and this one-volume publication focuses on information about the vaccines and vaccine safety. To get your free copy, send your name and mailing address to kim.charlson@perkins.org. That's kim.charlson@perkins.org.
What's your vision?
My vision's 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye and zero vision in the left eye.
20/200 at best on my left eye, and on my right eye, I cannot see.
No, I mean, what's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
My vision is employment opportunities for all, including people with disabilities.
My vision is for all of my students to dream big.
That he become fully independent.
For my patients to live their best lives.
What's your vision?
What's your vision?
What is your vision?
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, our vision is clear. We believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/mcb.